from the Midlands and North Wales. North of that will be rather cold and showery, and those temperatures really struggling at very best at around 10 to 12 degrees. On Thursday, a cold northerly wind with gales along North Sea facing coasts. A chilly, frosty start for some, but some lovely sunshine, but it will feel distinctly cold. That's the weather.
Thanks, Louise. Louise Lear there at the BBC Weather Centre. This is Radio 4. Now, Book of the Week. The Nobel laureate Seamus Heaney died recently. In this recording, he reads the sixth part of his translation of the epic Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf. After their night of feasting to celebrate Beowulf's victory over the evil monster Grendel, the Danes suffer a surprise attack from his avenging mother. She kills the wise Asheri and takes his body back to her swamp home. In pursuit of the fiend's mother, Beowulf plunges into the depths of her dark lake.
The hero observed that swamp thing from hell, the Tarnhag, in all her terrible strength, then heaved his war sword and swung his arm. The decorated blade came down ringing and singing on her head. But he soon found his battle torch extinguished. The shining blade refused to bite. It spared her and failed the man in his need. It had gone through many hand-to-hand fights, had hewed the armour and helmets of the doomed, but here at last the fabulous powers of that heirloom failed. Higelac's kinsman kept thinking about his name and fame. He never lost heart. Then, in a fury, he flung his sword away. The keen, inlaid, worm-loop-patterned steel was hurled to the ground. He would have to rely on the might of his arm. So must a man do who intends to gain enduring glory in a combat. Life doesn't cost him a thought. Then the prince of the Wargeats, warming to this fight with Grendel's mother, gripped her shoulder and laid about him in a battle frenzy. He pitched his killer opponent to the floor, but she rose quickly and retaliated, grappled him tightly in her grim embrace. The sure-footed fighter felt suddenly daunted. The strongest of warriors stumbled and fell. So she pounced upon him and pulled out a broad, whetted knife. Now she would avenge her only child. But the mesh of the chain mail on Beowulf's shoulder shielded his life, turned the edge and tip of the blade. The son of Edgthil would surely have perished, and the Geats lost their warrior under the wide earth, had the strong links and locks of his war gear not helped to save him. Holy God decided the victory. It was easy for the Lord, the ruler of heaven, to redress the balance once Beowulf got back on his feet. Then he saw a blade that boded well, a sword in her armoury, an ancient heirloom from the days of the giants, an ideal weapon, one that any warrior would envy, but so huge and heavy of itself, only Beowulf could wield it in a battle. So the shielding's hero, hard-pressed and enraged, took a firm hold of the hilt and swung the blade in an arc, a resolute blow that bit deep into her neck bone and severed it entirely, toppling the doomed house of her flesh. She fell to the floor. The sword dripped blood. The swordsman was elated. The seafarer's leader made for land, resolutely swimming, delighted with his prize, the mighty load he was lugging to the surface. His thanes advanced in a troop to meet him, thanking God and taking great delight in seeing their prince back safe and sound. Quickly, the hero's helmet and mail shirt were loosed and unlaced. The lake settled. Clouds darkened above the bloodshot depths. With high hearts, they headed away along footpaths and trails through the fields, roads that they knew, each of them wrestling with the head they were carrying from the lakeside cliff, men kingly in their courage and capable of difficult work. It was a task for four to hoist Grendel's head on a spear and bear it under a strain to the bright hall. Beowulf, son of Edgthil, spoke. "So, son of Halfdane, prince of the Shieldings, we are glad to bring this booty from the lake. It is a token of triumph, and we tender it to you. I barely survived the battle underwater. It was hard fought, a desperate affair that could have gone badly. If God had not helped me, the outcome would have been quick and fatal. I have wrested the hilt from the enemy's hand, avenged the evil done to the Danes. It is what was due. And this I pledge, O Prince of the Shieldings. You can sleep secure with your company of troops in Heorot Hall. Never need you fear for a single thane of your sept or nation, young warriors or old, that laying waste of life you and your people endured of yore. Then the golden hilt was handed over to the old lord, a relic from long ago for the venerable ruler. That rare smithwork was passed on to the prince of the Danes when those devils perished. Once death removed that murdering, guilt-steeped, God-cursed fiend, eliminating his unholy life and his mother's as well, it was will to that king, who of all the lavish gift-lords of the north was the best regarded between the two seas. And soon all was restored, the same as before. Happiness came back, the hall was thronged, and a banquet set forth. Black night fell and covered them in darkness. Then the company rose for the old campaigner. The grey-haired prince was ready for bed. And a need for rest came over the brave shield-bearing Geat. He was a weary seafarer far from home. So immediately a house guard guided him out, one whose office entailed looking after whatever a thane on the road in those days might need or require. It was noble courtesy. That great heart rested. The hall towered, gold shingled and gabled, and the guests slept in it, until the black raven with raucous glee announced heaven's joy, and a hurry of brightness overran the shadows. Warriors rose quickly, impatient to be off. Their own country was beckoning the nobles, and the bold voyager longed to be aboard his distant boat. Then that stalwart fighter ordered Hrunting to be brought to Unferth, and bade Unferth take the sword and thank them for lending it. He said he had found it a friend in battle and a powerful help. He put no blame on the blade's cutting edge. He was a considerate man. And there the warriors stood in their war gear, eager to go, while their honoured lord approached the platform where the other sat. The undaunted hero addressed Hrothgar. Beowulf, son of Edgthio, spoke. Now we who crossed the wide sea have to inform you that we feel a desire to return to Higelac. Here we have been welcomed and thoroughly entertained. You have treated us well. If there is any favour on earth I can perform beyond the deeds of arms I have done already, anything that would merit your affections more, I shall act, my lord, with alacrity. If ever I hear from across the ocean that people on your borders are threatening battle, as attackers have done from time to time, I shall land with 1,000 thanes at my back to help your cause. Higelac may be young to rule a nation, but this much I know about the King of the Geats. He will come to my aid and want to support me by word and action in your hour of need, when honour dictates that I raise a hedge of spears around you. Then, if Hrethric should think about travelling as a king's son to the court of the Geats, he will find many friends. Foreign places yield more to one who is himself worth meeting. Hrothgar spoke and answered him. The Lord in his wisdom sent you those words, and they came from the heart. I have never heard so young a man make truer observations. You are strong in body and mature in mind, impressive in speech. If it should come to pass that Hrethel's descendant dies beneath a spear, if deadly battle or the sword blade or disease fells the prince who guards your people and you are still alive, then I firmly believe the seafaring Geats won't find a man worthier of acclaim as their king and defender than you, if only you would undertake the lordship of your homeland. My liking for you deepens with time, dear Beowulf. What you have done is to draw two peoples, the Geat nation and us neighbouring Danes, into shared peace and a pact of friendship, in spite of hatreds we have harboured in the past. For as long as I rule this far-flung land, treasures will change hands, and each side will treat the other with gifts. Across the Gannet's Bath, over the broad sea, whorled prows will bring presents and tokens. I know your people are beyond reproach in every respect, steadfast in the old way with friend or foe. Then the Earl's defender furnished the hero with 12 treasures and told him to set out, to sail with those gifts safely home to the people he loved, but to return promptly. And so the good and grey-haired Dane, that high-born king, kissed Beowulf and embraced his neck, then broke down in sudden tears. Two forebodings disturbed him in his wisdom, but one was stronger. Nevermore would they meet each other face to face. And such was his affection that he could not help being overcome. His fondness for the man was so deep-founded, it warmed his heart and wound the heartstrings tight in his breast. The embrace ended, and Beowulf, glorious in his gold regalia, stepped the green earth. Straining at anchor and ready for boarding, his boat awaited him. So they went on their journey, and Hrothgar's generosity was praised repeatedly. He was a peerless king, until old age sapped his strength and did him mortal harm, as it has done so many. Down to the waves then, dressed in the web of their chainmail and war shirts, those young men marched in high spirits. The coast guard spied them, Thane setting forth, the same as before. His salute this time from the top of the cliff was far from unmannerly. He galloped to meet them, and as they took ship in their shining gear, he said how welcome they would be in Geatland. Then the broad hull was beached on the sand, to be cargoed with treasure, horses and war gear. The curved prow motioned. The mast stood high above Hrothgar's riches in the loaded hold. The guard who had watched the boat was given a sword with gold fittings, and in future days that present would make him a respected man at his place on the mead bench. Then the keel plunged and shook in the sea, and they sailed from Denmark. Right away the mast was rigged with its sea shawl, sail ropes were tightened, timbers drummed, and stiff winds kept the wave crosser skimming ahead. As she heaved forward, her foamy neck was fleet and buoyant, a lapped prow loping over currents, until finally the Geats caught sight of coastline and familiar cliffs. The keel reared up, wind lifted it home, it hit on the land. The harbour guard came hurrying out to the rolling water. He had watched the offing long and hard on the lookout for those friends. With the anchor cables, he moored their craft right where it had beached, in case a backwash might catch the hull and carry it away. Then he ordered the prince's treasure trove to be carried ashore. It was a short step from there to where Hrethel's son and heir, Hialak the Gold Giver, makes his home on a secure cliff in the company of retainers.
Seamus Heaney was reading from his translation of the great Anglo-Saxon poem Beowulf. It was produced in Salford by Susan Roberts.
Thank you.
Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Tuesday, the 8th of October. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Hebrides, 1006. Expected Norwegian Sea, 1003 by 1800 Tuesday. New low expected Southeast Iceland, 1007 by same time. High Portland, 1026. Expected just west of Shannon, 1029 by that time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at Sira, south at Sira, 40s, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, German Bight. Westerly or southwesterly, 4 or 5, occasionally 6. Rain or showers, moderate or good, occasionally poor at first. Humber, Thames, Dover, White, Portland, southeast Plymouth.